So, the Good Samaritan. We finally get to the story of our church's namesake. We only hear this story once every 3 years in the lectionary, but the familiarity of it reaches so much further. The story of the Samaritan who saves the wounded man is known by most, if not all, of us here. And both those inside or outside of the world of Christianity know this story because of the vast number of paintings and visual art and movies and music and poems, all that have been inspired by this tale. We have laws on the books called Good Samaritan laws that protect people offering emergency help from being sued by any unintended consequences. And many politicians have invoked this story as a way to show the benevolence of their government and nation towards others, particularly those who a country sees as in dire need of help. But it's hard. It's hard when a story has so much exposure. People assume that they know it. It's difficult to read from any perspective other than the one that they grew up with, the one they know in their heart. They know the characters. They know the motivations. They know what is going to happen. And they know who they, or their society as a whole, identify with. Now, as far back as the church father Origen in the 2nd or 3rd century, an allegorical reading of this story became prominent. And maybe it's the one that you're familiar with as well. You see, the whole of salvation history, Origen summed up in this parable. Let's look at it. So there's the man going down to Jericho. He's Adam, the first human, descending from the state of innocence, Jerusalem, into the difficulty and struggle of human existence outside of paradise, Jericho. There's the robbers, and they represent all of the forces of evil that cause us to sin. Then there's the priest and the Levite. These are read as the Old Testament law and prophets, which aren't able to fully save humanity. If it sounds a little bit anti-Semitic and supersessionist, it is. It's not Christianity's best moment. Then there's the Good Samaritan. It's Jesus. He is saving humanity from themselves and their fallen state. He's binding up their wounds and caring for them and bringing them back to life. And I just want you to look, the next time that you walk into the sanctuary on the right-hand side, there's an icon of the Good Samaritan, and around the Samaritan's head is a halo with a cross in it, representing Christ. And what about the inn? Well, that's the church, where we go to be refreshed and renewed. The innkeeper? Well, that's every bishop, priest, or deacon who cares for all of the believers until the Samaritan slash Jesus can return. Those two denarii. These are the care and sustenance that we receive through baptism and the Eucharist. And lastly, the Samaritan's return. It's the second coming. So I know, that's a lot for one parable to hold. And I will applaud Origen for his explanation and his thoroughness. But the end of our gospel passage has Jesus telling the lawyer, "Go and do likewise." Do what exactly? If this parable is an outline of human salvation, that doesn't really get us to the point of actually doing anything. Where's the action? We hear that the Samaritan's neighbor was the man in the ditch because he showed mercy, as the text says. So, go out. Show mercy. The next time you see someone half dead in a gutter, call 911, administer Narcan, do CPR, whatever you need to do. And that's good, right? And this is how most people end up seeing themselves in this story, as the Good Samaritan, as they reflect on how this story can apply to them and their lives. I need to help those less fortunate. I need to assist those who have ostracized me. I, the rich country, need to help you, the poor country. And now, none of this is a bad lesson at all. We should obviously do good for one another. Please do good for one another. But we have to remember that Jesus was Jewish. And he was telling this parable to a first century Jewish audience. And this audience would have never, ever come to the same conclusion as Origen. For one, it has a lot of terms and theology that weren't even hovering around at that time. They would have heard a different story altogether. And it's one that I actually think is a lot more challenging than just doing good for others. So, for a little bit of context, my favorite Jewish New Testament theologian, Amy Jo Levine, points out that in the first century, just like today, there are basically three types of Jewish people. There are the priests and the Levites, which were hereditary. And then there's everyone else, the Israelites. And she doesn't include any of the converts by choice. She says that in good storytelling fashion, these first two figures anticipate the third, who's going to be the hero. Jews in the first century and today typically are priests or Levites or Israelites. Thus, we have a priest that goes by, we have a Levite that goes by, and so this third figure, the hero, is going to be an Israelite. But something outrageous happens instead. It is a Samaritan, not an Israelite, that is walking along. Jews and Samaritans hate each other. They were sworn enemies. Do you remember a couple weeks ago we heard about Jesus passing through Samaria? They don't welcome him. Do you remember what James and John want to do? They want to send down fire from the sky and destroy the lot of them. And we hear in John's gospel as well, when Jesus encounters the Samaritan woman at the well, she is completely baffled as to why Jesus would ask her for a drink of water. John writes, Jews do not share things in common with Samaritans. And there are even historical reports of Samaritans murdering groups of Israelite pilgrims. And the feelings and the atrocities that they committed against one another were mutual. If it helps, you can think about West Side Story. One side is the Sharks and one side is the Jets. They don't get along. And a Jewish listener would have heard this, and they would have thought to themselves, there is no such thing as a good Samaritan. These two words, they're oxymorons. They just can't possibly go together. It's unfathomable. It does not compute. It's like saying, the good terrorist, the good serial killer, the good dictator. So I want you to think for just a moment, think of the most heinous, the worst human being that you can think of. You got it? That is the Samaritan to the injured man. in their minds, the people in Jesus' audience would have identified with the man laying in the ditch who was left for dead. They themselves may have been robbed, possibly on that very same stretch of road. The road from Jerusalem to Jericho was well known for being wildly dangerous, so much so that it was nicknamed the Way of Blood because of the violence that occurred on it. So imagine, there you are. You're naked. You're robbed. You're left for dead. And along comes the person you hate most in the world. A person who you can't even fathom in your wildest imagination being able to do 1 ounce of good for anyone. What do you do? There's only two choices. You die or be rescued by the enemy. This parable asks us to see the possibility of good in those we most vehemently despise. Is it possible? In Germany in the 1990s, a former member of a neo-Nazi gang in Germany named Steven, who had served several prison sentences for hate crimes, was severely injured in a bar fight. The only person who stopped to help him in the street was a Jewish man, a Holocaust survivor's son, who owned a local bookstore. This man administered first aid and waited with Stephen until an ambulance arrived. Stephen later said, "A man I'd have spit on as a teenager gave me his hand." That moment cracked me open. In London, in July of 2005, after the suicide bombings in the Tube, a Muslim man named Rafiq, who had been injured in the explosion, was rescued by a Jewish paramedic named David. Though he was unconscious at first, Rafiq later learned who had helped to save his life. He requested to meet David after he recovered. At their meeting, Rafiq reportedly said, "All I ever heard was that your people hated mine. I see now how wrong that is." In June 1996, at a Ku Klux Klan rally in Ann Arbor, Michigan, protesters and the KKK supporters violently clashed with each other. African American and anti-Klan activist Keisha Thomas, who was only 18 at the time, stepped in and shielded a white man who had an SS-style tattoo on his arm, who was being beaten by anti-Klan protesters. He survived thanks to her. I could go on. The parable of the Good Samaritan gives us a more difficult task than just helping others. We are the ones on the ground looking up at someone that we think is horrible. And the parable asks us, can you see the possibility of good even in those you loathe? Would you accept help from your enemy? And do you really, really believe that compassion can actually be had by all? Overcome hate or die on the road? That's a choice. Real people have done it. Go and do likewise.